It's time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Belaga. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga, Jason Wilde segment. Before then, probably some discussion of soccer, because only Brian Belaga is capable of telling us how bad the U.S. was in that game. I have only one observation. I will never understand the U.S. goalie, because I think I saw that once in sixth grade soccer or junior high. But like, once a goalie leaves that, whatever that area is, all you do is kick the ball as fast as you can. And Brian, first of all, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Fine. Isn't that like,
yes,
putting on your helmet like a goalie from whatever, because you can get hurt. I mean, right? Everything, once you, what is it? The box, is it outside? Once the goalie gets outside the box, they're just a regular player.
Yeah, you can't touch it. You just got to get rid of it.
And you got to do it as quickly as possible so you can get back near the damn goal.
Correct.
What was he doing? Or did he just whiff?
I almost think it's like when you hit a great drive and you're about 90 yards out, and then you stuff a sand wedge 6 inches behind the ball and hit a fat wedge shot. Like, that's like what that looked like to me.
So he was trying to kick it. He just...
Yes, I think he was trying to kick it. Right. I think he like hit the ground behind him. Like it was very awkward looking. And then by the time he tried to recover, well, there's not time to recover. It's over. By the way, I first want to ask: is the Miz pitching tonight, or is he not?
Excellent, thank you. You're doing. He is not pitching tonight.
Okay.
He pitched earlier this week in the afternoon, and he recreated my comment that I made about Dwayne Wade, and that was, Dwayne Wade, even when he's bad, he's good, and when he's good, he's real good. So this was the first time where, you know, he gave up some runs, and so, but in the end, it was, even when he was bad, he was good. So thank you. The Miz is not pitching today.
Okay. Well, then we can move on.
Yes, we can
move on. We'll just say this, because, I mean, first of all, you got to get me your Venmo or Zelle or whatever it is so I can send you your $10.
$10, yep.
Yep.
I actually didn't think I was going to win the bet. That's one of the most surprising bets I've won.
Yeah,
I was too lazy to go over and hedge, which I really wanted to do, and by being lazy, it worked even better.
But that performance was, what's the right word? It was gutless, in my opinion.
Explain that, because I just thought they played a better team, and the other team moved the ball better, and the other team dominated. Just, they seemed so much better. I thought the U.S. was lucky to score, because that was just a weird free kick or whatever. But I just thought, wow, they pass better, they're quicker. It reminded me of high school soccer, where you have players that can just take the ball away from somebody else, right? You don't see that much at the highest level. And they just, two guys were there, and the Belgian guy got it almost every time. But I will defer to you on this, because everybody else has talked about just what you said, the toughness or no attitude or whatever. Take it away. I'm done.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, that's part of it, that Belgium showed their class, right? Like, I mean, they showed how much better they are, even though that they were struggling through the group phases and through, you know, obviously their first game against Senegal, where they went down 2-0, but they came back and won. They showed their class on the field. And I looked no further than the first goal that the U.S. gave up, right? The ball gets played back into the box, and three guys are looking at it, bouncing up in the air, and no one attacks the ball. Belgium wins it back, gets it to the byline, crosses it, and it's a tapping goal. And then there's two defenders staring at the guy tapping in the goal. So, like, to me, that's like, right off the jump, when you see that happen, you're like, this is, they're not even fighting for the ball in their box. Like, no one's even trying to, like, make a play on the ball in their box when they've been in trouble essentially down there since kickoff, right? Like you saw the right. goalie. And, but why? Great save.
The one on that goal, you meant there was a guy, I thought, you know, when you get in that area, everybody seems to guard somebody. Like, I got this guy, and the guy he was guarding, he wasn't even looking at him. He was watching the ball that went right by or
yes.
to the guy yes. for the east. Those, that was the easiest goal I've seen in
yes. It was a tap in.
Yes.
Just a little tap in. Yes, exactly. And like that to me,
okay.
that whole sequence of play sums up that game. Like okay. it that started it and it continued on that way. And obviously the goalie error in the second half that made it 3-1. That put the nail in the coffin.
Because they were fighting back. It was 2-1. They were getting better. Yeah.
Yeah. They came out inspired in the second half and they were moving it better than what they did in the first half, and they had Belgium on the back foot a little bit and were battling, but it just goes back to the same it's the same U.S. team, right? Like and that's unfortunately what this is. Like, they keep saying, oh, the future so bright. Well, what do you I'm confused.
By the same U.S., you mean getting beaten at this level?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. They were taken apart by Belgium 4 years ago. They were taken apart by the Netherlands. It's the same story, right? And I get we all had excitement and we had hope that this would be better. And Belgium wasn't playing their best football at the time. And clearly, we allowed them to do that pretty easily. They played really good, and we played really bad. But to say, like, there's nothing but great things to look ahead for this, it's like, well, how? With what players? The same players? The same group? You're going to run that back after what just happened when you had a easy draw in the group phase? By all means, Paraguay, Australia, and Turkey, who you didn't even have to beat, and they beat you. And then you play Bosnia in the first knockout, and then you play a team that's a team, a real team, and you get destroyed. I mean, at what point are we going to go, maybe this group that people claim or self-proclaim is the golden generation of U.S. soccer?
Well, hold on. That's where I would ask you. People have said that, and I go, well, but that may be the case, because if you have more players – they're on this team that are playing in better European leagues, Premier, whatever, then by that definition, they should be a little better, right? Or am I wrong in saying that? It seems like everybody agrees there are far more U.S. players playing in better leagues now than ever before.
Yes, there is.
Okay, so then we're messing up because you should be better then.
Yeah, we've seen as this group comes together.
Okay.
They cannot put it together. I don't know if it's pressure. I don't know if it's...
And they brought in a coach, paid a lot of money for him, and it seems to me, and again, I don't know how good, it seems like he didn't hurt him. Were they better because of the coach? Just thought so until
they played a real team. No, I mean, like, okay, so, and this is what I, and, like, this is how I can always relate this back to the Packers, right? There's only so much a good coach can do when things start like that start to happen during the game, right? Like there's not much Pochettino could have done mid game there to try to turn that thing around. He made subs.
So you can't take that defender and immediately remove him from the game, or do you just feel like
you don't have a better defender that you can put
all right,
in?
Okay.
You just don't. You know what I mean? Like your options at that point are few and far between.
Now, didn't he kick the water when the goalie made that mistake, or was I?
That was the second goal after they scored the free kick.
Oh, and they scored in 90 seconds, yeah.
Yes, that's where.
See, and I think he's gone, you think it can't get worse, and it does. And then after that, he should have kicked it again with the goalie, right? Because the goalie mistake was even worse than giving up a goal in 90 seconds, correct?
Yes. I'm shocked he didn't chuck the water bottle holder on the field.
Yeah.
That's what I'm surprised by. But it's just with U.S. soccer, it's the same thing. And I almost feel like maybe it's just me, but I almost feel like the talking heads on TV deceived us with how good
this team actually is. That was my complaint. That was why I brought up all this stuff. Yes, they oversold it. And I think there were a few that didn't and tried to say, well, hold on here.
Yes, there were a few. Yes. And
but they're just promoting it because fans were excited. This is like, this is the greatest soccer tournament ever. 30 million.
Watched it. Average. Yes. Yes. And like, and that's the thing. You want to have that optimism about your country and your team, right? Like you want to have that optimism. So they're feeding into that. And you watch the team play throughout the group. And then obviously the first knockout game, and there were things to be excited about. Don't get me wrong. Man, like you go up against a big boy team and it was men versus boys. That's what it looked like. It looked like you had a group of adult men playing against the U15.
No, it was a bad high school team. Bad high school team. Right?
It looked like the Belgium senior team versus the US under 18s. That's what that looked like to me out there. And like I know that's a nasty shot at him, but like that's just the truth. Like I'm sorry, like I watched the game and then I watched all the highlights again after the game, and you're seeing it and you're just like, and Belgium sat De Bruyne, they sat Doku for most of the game, and they sat Lukaku for most of the game, and Lukaku comes off the bench and scores a goal in 8 minutes and then tells our fans to shut up. Like the most slap in the face thing that he could do, and he does it right off the get. And the guy that makes the mistake, Chris Richards, the center back, plays in the Premier League. He's one of our players that plays in England at Crystal Palace. Solid all season for Crystal Palace. Fumbles the ball at his feet in the back. Lukaku takes it, scores 4-1. Rub it, you know, more salt in the wound. So, like, that's just – that's the way the team played, and it was – honestly – after it went 2-1, you just felt like there probably wasn't going to be a way back. There probably wasn't going to be a way back. And I get they came out hot in the second half, but I just think Belgium, they had complete control over that game. They felt comfortable if they were sitting back and playing defense, if they were pressing, if they were being aggressive, if they were they felt comfortable the entire time. And that, to me, was very apparent when you watch that game, and it's disappointing they lost. And if they would have lost and not gotten run out the gym, this is a different conversation, right? It's a completely different conversation if it's a 2-1 game final, and you know the way it looked in the second half continued on the whole game and it was back and forth. You get run out of the gym 4-1, man, it's just like this is embarrassing. And that's what it ended up being.
I would say it was never close, but it was close, or felt like it was getting closer. Was it close at 2-1 for a couple minutes?
Yeah, for like 10 minutes in the second half.
Yeah,
for like 10 minutes in the second half when the U.S. was attacking, they were moving the ball up the field, and they were doing good things for the first 10 minutes, and then Belgium was like, all right, they're getting a little too comfortable doing this. We're going to switch things up, and then the goalie kicks the ground, and it's 3-1, and that's that. And it's, again, it's unfortunate because then still the talking heads tell us there's so much to look forward to. The future is bright. It's like, huh.
Seen that movie before?
Yeah,
better come up with a new version.
Yeah, listen, you guys said that 4 years ago.
And you're right. If they say that, then they would have to say how horrible this game was. Like, if you have that positive view of the future, this was the worst loss in the history of the United States.
Yes.
If you think that they've advanced to that point. My last question was about, I don't even know the guy's name, but I said he's got to be hurt. He can't be that bad.
Pulisic?
Yes.
Well, he obviously got hurt.
The game, but they stole it from him, what, 19 times or something?
Oh, he gave up the ball 11 times in 45 minutes.
That's bad high school stuff.
Oh, it was horrendous. And the thing is, like, he's a good player. So, like, I don't know what was going on with him
Right.
And that for like, you can't even explain some things. And maybe he felt too much pressure. Maybe he felt he had to do too much. But given it over 11 times in 45 minutes, he turned it over more in 45 minutes than anybody in the whole game did for 90 plus.
Yeah. And he's he's not that bad, right? I mean, I don't.
No, he's not.
Like if you have a game in which you give up 6 sacks, I'm sorry, I'm going to say there's something wrong with Bulaga, right? Isn't that what we basically watched? How do you describe how horrific he was given? It'd be like
go ahead. Yeah, I don't want to make excuses for him that maybe his calf was that bad or something. Like, I don't want to give excuses to him, but like, my only thought is that he is injured or mentally he can't hang in that situation. It's one of the two. Like, and that's the only way I can put it, because I've watched him play at AC Milan. I've watched him play at Chelsea. I've watched him play at Dortmund, obviously with the U.S. team. He's not that bad. So I don't know what took place in the first 45 minutes of that game that caused him to do that. I mean, it's not like he was going against world-class right backs or defenders like the guy you saw in Morocco, Hakimi, or anything like that, or Mendes from Portugal, or any, like, he wasn't going against any of those guys. So what was the cause? I don't know. You could chalk it up to a bad day. Guys have bad days.
But it 11... was so bad, you can't.
Yeah.
Okay, if you gave up 6 sacks and someone said, Bulaga's just having a bad day, I'd go, no.
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 Aaron Rodgers throws 5 interceptions and he's just having a bad day. You'd go, no, there's something wrong. He can't be that bad.
But no, I would have come out and said I was absolutely crap, actually. No, that's what happened. You know, that's what I would have said. Right. I was terrible. Like, I was absolutely terrible.
Yeah,
is what I would have said. And, like, I don't have an excuse for it. Even if I did have an injury, I wouldn't have.
You wouldn't mention it.
I would never say it.
Because even unless you had lost a leg, you would have assumed even with whatever injury you had, you could have avoided playing that poorly.
I could have. I should have.
Yes, should have. Yes.
I should have. That's right. Exactly.
All right. Enough. The best segment, Jason Wilde and Brian Bulaga next.
It's time for Jason Wilde on the Homer Hour on 94.5 ESPN.
Yes. Yes, it is that time for the Brian Bulaga Hour with Jason Wilde. Ah, God is sweet. Take it away, Doc.
Jason, good evening. How are you?
And what time does your guy play in the quarterfinals?
That's Holland. Tomorrow. Tomorrow.
Tomorrow? All right.
Yep.
Tomorrow. He's won me over, man. When I saw him play against FC Bayern at Lambeau Field, you were like a guest of honor, right? Like they like carried you out on like a throne of some sort, or if I remember correctly.
They took care of us. Yeah.
He just was the guy that looked like Clay Matthews to me. And then watching him, and I've seen some video. He seems to be like my kind of player. Like I've been seeing these videos of like him folding up his warm up while all the other guys are throwing it at the kit man. And I was just like, this guy's my kind of guy. And by the way, he's really good on top of it. So
yes.
I'm that's my adopted new team now that the Americans have been eliminated.
Yeah, that's me too. I'm going for Norway now that the U.S. is eliminated. I like the Norwegian team. It's a cool story.
It is, and by the way, you know, the fact that you and I are in lockstep on that makes this an even better The Brian Bulaga Hour featuring Jason Wilde.
Yes, yes. I want to get in, because obviously today was your first day of the list that I love that you make every year, because I feel like you get the list very accurate of the top most important Packer players. And I always like reading through them, because I think you do a good job. You detail it well and all those things. And today you released your first one, correct? Number 20, Hargrave. Is that... Am I correct on that?
Hargrave. You are correct. I got to be honest, though. you know, I think the world of you, but I was a little disappointed in your feedback because you're part of the Blue Ribbon panel, and all you said was, I like the list, and I wasn't sure if I did a really good job or you just had more important things to do.
No. If I say I like the list, that means I like the list. That means I don't see any I don't see any corrections with the list.
Okay,
that's the way. I don't want to make a long drawn out thing just to be like, you know what, the list is right. Then I write a page text and then I bore you to death by it. And then the end of it just says I like where it's at. You could leave it. that's the way I like to go about it. But go into a little bit for the people that haven't read. If you haven't read it, I'd recommend reading it because, like, again, you do a great job with this list, and I think it's very accurate. Kind of go into Hargrave and why you have him where he's at and expectations for him this year, really.
Yes. So I appreciate you, A, helping me, B, reading it, and then C, asking about it because it is great to – because I get a lot of people involved. I'm not – you know, there are some that think they have all the answers. I definitely am not in that group. But I got some good feedback, surprisingly, from Alex Strolf. That was unexpected.
Oh, wow.
And from a few other – I just said that to see if he was listening, to see if I would get a text message after that. He had some good insight. My old buddy Tom Oates, who's on my Blue Ribbon panel, sent me a couple of thoughts that were helpful. But I thought Hargrave made sense where he is because, quite frankly, they need him to be a good player for them, but I'm not sure what our realistic expectations are for him. He's been a really good player in this league. He had his best year of his career playing for Jonathan Gannon in Philadelphia, but as you well know, 2022 was a long time ago, man. Like, the NFL is what have you done for me lately, not for long league. And while I think there are very positive things that he brings to the table, potentially, you know, I want to see what he's got. And we certainly didn't get to see much throughout the course of the offseason program just because, you know, he didn't do a whole lot. They don't do a whole lot even with the guys that are healthy. We never found out what might be ailing him that was causing him to be limited during like the mini camp, other than the fact that he wasn't really missing much. Right. So again, I think they have to be better against the run. And I'm not just talking about their performance against Baltimore, which was one of the worst performances I've seen. And I've seen some bad run defensive performances, including a game that you were certainly a participant in San Francisco in the 2012 playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I just think they've got to be more consistently solid against the run, and he's a big part of that.
Yeah, do you think – I mean, and I like the ranking too because not because it's obviously number 20 and it's you know right where it starts, but I think – he's not being just brought in for what you mentioned, the run game, in my opinion. I think he's being brought in also for his veteran leadership, right? And
yep.
To me, that's what this team has been missing big time in certain moments, right? Like that to me is, you see what happened against Chicago twice. Like I just feel like if you have some more guys like that in and around the team, on the field, they can get guys to calm down and settle in and refocus. And to me, that's going to be not just his, you know, run-stopping ability and doing those things. It's going to be a lot of that as well. And how he's able to kind of help that younger defense, especially when Mike is not there early on, mm-hmm. to kind of dial back in when things aren't going great early on in a game or in a third quarter where, you know, the offense isn't doing much and they got to be on the field more than they'd want to be. So, like, to me, he's obviously very important because you need a lot out of him in the run game. But also, from a leadership standpoint, he's got to be one of your fallback guys that rallies the troops. And that's why, to me, I think 20 is an appropriate number just because, obviously, we don't know how he's going to be deployed in the defense yet either. So we don't really know how that's going to go, but we do expect a lot out of him. That's why he's in that top 20, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, he played 53% of the snaps for the Vikings last year and was productive in Brian Flores' defense. But I think you make a really important point. And I mentioned the old head. I had the quote from him saying, they all call me the old head. And he is, right, for the Packers. They've got four guys that are over the age of 30. They've got Tyrod Taylor, who's going to turn 37. They've got Javon Hargrave, who's 33. They've got Matt Orzech, the long snapper, who's 31. And now they've got Zaire Franklin, who is 30, and just turned 30 on July 2nd. And to your point, and it obviously carries a lot more weight when you say it, because you were a young guy surrounded by veterans when you were the youngest guy to ever start a Super Bowl. And then later in your career, you were the veteran guy that everyone looked to in that room. And you were even a veteran guy compared to David Bakhtiari, who came in, you know, 4 years after you had been a first-round pick. And the one thing that I always keep going back to is the conversation I had with Evan Williams in the visitors' locker room of Soldier Field after the playoff loss. And, you know, I think the world of Evan, you know, not just because he reminds me of your, you know, former Iowa fellow alumnus, Micah Hyde, and not just because of the number, like the way he carries himself, the way he's just a football player, but he's also really bright, and so is Micah. And, you know, I said, look, if I am off base, I would hope we have a good enough relationship now that you say, no, Jason, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And that was how I prefaced it. I said, so please, if I am wrong about this, please tell me that I am. And I said, but when I look at what happened tonight, I see a team that lacks the maturity to handle the ups and the good things and the success, like the old Mike McCarthyism, our biggest challenge will be handling success. You're up 21-3. You're up 21-6 before the fourth quarter. And you guys didn't handle that. And then when everything went to hell and things are spiraling, then you weren't able to handle the adversity either. And I said, is that like you're a mature guy for being a second year guy, but does that tell you that you guys aren't mature enough? And he was like, you hit the nail on the head. And I said, are you sure? Like, I wanted to give him every opportunity to say, no, you're making something up. You're an idiot, which would not be the first time I've been told that. And he was like, no, you're exactly right. We have to be more mature. We have to be able to handle the highs and the lows and not ride the roller coaster. Well, Javon Hargrave played in back-to-back Super Bowls, right? Zaire Franklin, again, he's the first guy in my career that saw me in the locker room, walked up to me, had never spoken to me. I was in the group around him when he had talked like a week earlier, and like introduces himself to me. Like, nobody does that. And now, do I think he remembered all of the names of people that he introduced himself to? Probably not. Just like when the dentist stood around the circle and introduced himself to everyone, and I wasn't there, so I missed that. But like, there's a maturity to those guys. And one of the things that I would argue, and everyone gets after me, I think Goody's a good GM. I think he has been at times given a pass more than I think he deserves. But one of the things that I don't think is a strength of his, and he's certainly not alone, there's lots of people in the world who are like this, he doesn't admit mistakes. And whether it was Jordy in 2018 and replacing him with Jimmy Graham and being wrong about his theory that, you know, Aaron wouldn't see Devontae as the number one receiver, even though, as you well know from being in that locker room, everyone knew Devontae was now the number one receiver. Not only Rodgers and Devontae, but Jordy knew it too. So he would never say that. And I had asked him in February when he finally talked after the season. I brought up what Evan had said, and I said, "Do you need more 30-something guys that have been there, done that, bought the T-shirt? Because if it seems to me there's a line of demarcation at age 30, and I don't know how you deny that." The record is what the record is about how many 30-year-olds have been on the team. And then he goes out and adds two more, and then a backup quarterback who's also well beyond 30. So he almost strikes me as the guy, and we all have this person in our life, who he doesn't necessarily say, I was wrong or I'm sorry, but he kind of demonstrates it with his behavior. And I kind of feel like that's it. Like, I'm never going to admit that there was a line of demarcation, but now look at what I did with the roster. And I think those guys, you're exactly right, Brian. Not only do they add guys that can still play, again, to what degree, we'll have to wait and see, but also a maturity that, I mean, Zaire Franklin is going to be great for that locker room. You can just tell from the minute you listen to him that guys are going to be around him, you know, once they teach him where the bathroom is and where the training room is, he's going to be teaching them a lot in exchange.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. And again, we've said this a bunch, right? Like, this isn't something new that we're saying right now. We've said this a bunch. You don't need to have 20 of those guys. You don't need that. But if you have guys on each side of the ball that have that experience, that have that knowledge, that kind of have that been around the block mentality and understand the ebbs and flows of games and ups and downs, especially big games, those are valuable pieces to have. I truly believe that guys that have been through a lot, that have played in big games, that have been on good teams, they've been on some bad teams, and they know what good looks like. And they're in Green Bay right now, and it's great. I don't mean that like they just won a Super Bowl, but things are great in Green Bay. Like the organization, right, how they take care of guys, like it's great there. And as an older guy, you appreciate that, and you want to make the most out of that opportunity. And now you're going to a good football team by all means, and you want that team to succeed. And you're going to do everything you can to put your best foot forward to help the younger guys on the team to do that. So to me, that's where the value in those guys are. And then, yeah, like you said, to what extent they play, we'll find out, right? But to me, it's more than just that. It's how they're going to impact guys around them. And that's going to be the biggest thing and kind of a fun thing to watch as the season goes on.
Right, and let's be honest, too. Like, and you obviously became one of those guys during your career. You know, a guy like Kenny Clark was like the quintessential guy like that for the defense, right? I'm sorry, I never bought into the Rashawn Gary part of it. Like, I just didn't. He didn't strike me as someone who really – commanded a room or got guys to follow him. I know you only played with him when he was a rookie, right? But like,
yep.
You need guys. You can't just be Micah Parsons. And I think Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney are guys like that. But you needed a few more on that side of the ball because, again, when you're giving up 25 fourth quarter points, you need somebody that's going to just say, hey, we're good. We're all right. All right. Everybody take a deep breath. We're better than this. We're gonna be fine. Let's get this turned around. And it just felt like with Micah Parsons up in a suite somewhere, right, on crutches after surgery, and your safeties, you want those guys certainly to be leaders, but the guys up front are the ones who set the tone. You need people in those first two levels to be able to do that, and they obviously didn't have that.
Yep. Well, and then you, like we said, then you lose Cooper mid-game as well. I mean, there's a lot of things we could talk about that game in general, but this is about overall. Because there's some games in this season that was missing as well. You look at Cleveland, for example, was missing in Cleveland. Just there's certain games throughout the year you just kind of look at things and go, you know, the team is talented, don't get me wrong. But there's a couple things missing that could help this thing out. But, no, I think you're spot on with where you have them, and I'm excited as the stories come out, you know, guy by guy to read all those. So they are good to read and kind of get your insight on it.
Well, tomorrow will be one of those violations of the rules that Gabe Neitzel has set forth. I've put two people together in this one, and it's going to irritate him, but I hope you'll still read it at least.
Did you do that?
Because I have my reasons.
I know. I believe that was my question.
Why? I know. I'm not going to give them to you.
Okay. All right.
Because it's my list. Homer.
I know it's your list, But you clearly have a reason because you went against what your norm is. Why you won't explain what that reason is surprising to me.
Well, this
but...
one, let me give you a hint so you'll read it tomorrow.
I probably won't.
This one is, I'm gonna hang up now then.
All right.
Okay, what is that? What is that? Is it part of your job to read that kind of stuff?
No.
Prepared for the show?
No, I don't need it. I have questions to ask of you. You're fantastic. And if you would say,
read your work.
Why?
You're so fantastic, I don't need to read
Durant,
your work.
I hear you. Tell me anything. Tell me something in there that I haven't received or gotten from you in all the listening I do to your show and all the time you're on. But I will do this. It apparently is important to you that I read this stuff. So I will.
Yeah,
I will.
Thank
where
you.
Actually
thank
is
you
it?
For,
where is it?
For
where
your,
do I find it? This tells you I've never
very,
read.
Very simple.
Where is it?
Channel3000.com. Channel3000.com.
All right. And how often do you write these things?
Every day. So today was 20.
Every
tomorrow will
day?
Be next. Yeah, counting down to number one. The day before the first practice of training camp.
No, I mean, aside, yep. do you have a column on channel3000.com every day?
Yeah. I mean, not during the off season. I took a few days off from writing.
Holy.
But, yeah, I think I wrote like 600. It's the same as with the State Journal before. Like, I write probably 600 stories a year.
I never read one of those either, but I'll change.
Oh, my God. All right,
well, look,
I gotta go.
No,
you need to take a commercial break
now,
anyway.
We're not taking a commercial break because you'd have to tell me there's something there that you don't do when I listen to you, and I don't think there is.
Of course there's stuff there.
What?
I can write as long as I want. I only get to talk a certain amount.
Right,
and
you
by
pick...
the way, I do a show with Tausch.
I know, and you
and
pick your best stuff.
I don't get to.
You pick your best stuff to be on the show, right?
No, not really. I get in what I can get in.
All right, I'll
but
be.
That doesn't mean there's not other good stuff.
All right, I'm going to read to see whether that's accurate. No, it isn't.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure what my answer is going to be, but I could be proven wrong. Go ahead, Brian. You finish. We need a more positive spin. Can you crank this tone up a little bit? I probably would have been better.
I don't know, Brian.
I've been better off leaving out some of the stuff I mentioned.
Let me do it for you, Brian. Brian, thanks a lot for reading. You're a good friend. You really do all the things you need to do to be prepared for a radio program. I appreciate you very much. You guys, I will talk to you next week. Take care. Be good.
All right. Thanks. All right. Now that he's gone, what have you learned from there that you didn't already know by listening to Jason?
Well, I don't listen to Wilde and Tausch every single day, so
okay.
I don't get the breakdown.
Okay.
Every single day of certain things. So, like right. when, especially this top 20 list is one that I really like because I like going through it because then, as the season goes on, you can see what guy like the importance or what people have ranked or he has ranked guys like. How do they play? Let's see it. There's names on a list. I mean, we can all put names on a list, but he puts thought into it about certain aspects like we talked about, veteran leadership. It's
all
not
right,
just
we got to take a break because I ruined your segment. Talk too long. Oh, man. I don't read anything, but I'll have to start reading this. Are they long? That's the other thing. This stuff, they can write forever now because there's no paper, right? He can do
it's
8 million
that,
letters.
It's not that long.
All right,
it's
okay.
It's not that long.
Yeah. All right. I'll do it. I will admit that I already have an opinion before I start reading, but maybe it'll be proven wrong. Next. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and yes, I went to channel3000.com, and I read today's Jason Woody article on the Packers talking about, where did he rank? Javon Hargrave, defensive tackle. No worries. I'll shortchange it for you. I'd like to appreciate it. I think I knew this. Now I have it down. All you need to know about him is he's 33 years old, and this is his third team in 3 years. You know what that means, Brian Bulaga?
What?
Major concern whether the guy's any good anymore. If you're on three teams in 3 years, you got problems. Know anybody great that was on three teams in 3 years after 30? And that was a good sign?
I can't put a name to it right now.
But if a guy shows up on your team when you were playing and he's over 30 and it's his third team in 3 years, your group has a question. What the hell's going on, right? What's the deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly going to be a question of can he still perform at a high level?
Or maybe he was hurt or something. I got to get a good answer.
Yeah. I mean, he was what? With Philly, then Minnesota, and then now Green Bay?
Yep.
Yeah, so, I mean, he was productive in Minnesota last year.
Four with Pittsburgh, three with Philadelphia, two with the 49ers, and last season with the Vikings. Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's gone through Vikings. So we got something going on here. Come on. I don't know what it is, but there's something going on. He's that good, four teams, and now in his 30s, three teams in 3 years. He's never stayed anywhere more than four seasons. That was the first time. Then three, then two, and then one. I know how that goes, 4-3-2-1. I wonder what they're saying about my career. Get ready for half a season from Hargrave. I don't know.
I hope not.
No.
I hope not. But, I mean, I think there's certainly probably some questions. But, again, you can't judge it until he actually is out there playing and see what happens.
Oh, I agree totally. Yeah, but you have little signs that make you wonder.
Yeah, and, you know, you don't know if it's because, obviously, they played Minnesota last year, so the guys on that team know his ability.
Yeah.
You don't know if it's cap-related, obviously, age-related.
Things
like that. So, I mean, there could be different factors, but the guys in that team play against them in Minnesota. So they know the type of player he is, and obviously judgments have already been made based off of that, right? Like that's clear. I mean, you can get a free agent that you've never played against or you don't know much about, but if you played him already twice in a season, the judgments have been made. It's just now how does he fit into this group and what role he plays on this defense?
And clearly he's got an upside because people keep giving him another chance.
Yeah.
And they're pretty good teams.
Yeah. It's not like he's been on bad football teams. I mean, they've all been pretty good teams, playoff teams.
So people have had a chance to get him. He's available, and then somebody has. With Brian Bulaga, who, by the way, was never on three different teams in 3 years. Next. You never know when someone you care about might need a place like Curative Care. For more than a century, Curative Care has been helping children, adults, and families across Southeast Wisconsin navigate developmental disabilities, find the support they need to thrive. What really stood out, Curative Care doesn't just provide therapy. And I would add, stuff is all hard. At Curative, they get it, and that is all that comes with such help. Helping families every step of the way, connect parents. Some parents said life is a bunch of curveballs, but this place is constant. If you have a family member, friend, coworker, or neighbor who may be looking for answers, support, or services for a loved one with developmental disabilities, or you're looking for answers, visit curative.org. C-U-R-A-T-I-V-E, curative.org. All right, the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour, and as usual, in honor of his greatness, we'll have ESPN National in progress. This is a question, and I've asked before, I feel like I ask you every week, as to whether, like, will the Packers win their division?
Yeah, I mean, that's a...
I want to say yes, but...
I want to say yes, too. I don't know. I have to see how this defense looks without Micah for the first few weeks to make that determination.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because say he does miss 8 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You have to see how that defense is playing without him for the first at least two games to see if that's going to be a possibility. Because even if he comes back, you know, week 8, week 9, to win the division, if you had a rough start, is difficult. That's difficult to do. I mean, you're essentially fighting uphill for a wild card spot at that point if you have a rough start and even are very successful on the back half of the season. We know how important getting off to 4 or 5 wins in that first 6 games is.
Maybe you hope that it's the I hope the division is so tough that everybody's going to have losses, so that the losses they might get with no Parsons won't hurt them as much, because everybody's going to have losses. I want to pick a three-way tie.
Ooh.
Then you have three teams at 3-3. No. You play six games, right? Three of them, three, six. So
yeah.
Four teams at 3. We have a four-way tie for the division. I want to be on the... Now, I think that Detroit's going to be one game back, so... And that can't work.
No, that won't work.
You got to... All right, I got to figure out. But there's going to be a tie. It's just a question of how many teams. This division will be a tie. You want to join my club? Probably not. I haven't sold it real well, but...
No, you haven't sold it well enough for me yet to say there'll be a
I'll get the math.
Yes.
I want to go a four-way tie. Let's look on the Discount Liquor Twitter poll question. Which is more likely, Miz to throw a no-hitter or there to be a four-way tie in the division?
Miz.
Oh. You said it so fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's ever happened in the history of the NFL. So,
I think the answer to that is you know it, correct?
Yes.
Maybe when they had two teams in a division back in 1864 when they opened it up. Yes, that's what I'm on record now. That'll be the next question. Four, find out the odds. We'll see what the odds are. That'll tell us which is more likely to occur. Brian Bulaga, Homer Hour, the session with Jason Wood. It was great. I interrupted and
made Jason mad.
Yes, I actually think I did. I don't think that was made up. I think he was both mad and disappointed in me.
Yeah,
I don't know that he was surprised.
So.
Yes. All right.
Not surprised.
Brian Bulaga, Homer Hour, as he deserves it.